If you're a parent with a small child, please do not be afraid to bring them to worship. That sound, we were all there. We all made that sound. Let's be honest. I was not a happy child sometimes. So we've all made that noise. We've all experienced that noise. Even if we don't have kids, you were the kid at one point. So parents of little people, do not be afraid to bring them to worship. It is okay. We've all been there. It just happens sometimes. So I would much rather have the small people here. Because what does that mean? It means, hey, there's a future for the church. So at the very least, these little people down here, these small people, they're going to be annoyed by small people in the church someday, hopefully. So bring them to worship, guys. And I know we've got the Bible hour, and we've got, of course, that different things that are available to you as a parent with small children. But there's just no substitute for being in the assembly with the believers. So please come. We've been looking at, of course, what is the church? And throughout history, one of the main facets of religion has been the concept of the temple. This is not a new thing. The temple idea has been around for millennia. It is an edifice or a place dedicated to the service or worship of a deity or deities. That's a dictionary definition, you can tell by the language. An edifice or place dedicated to the service or worship of a deity or deities. It's a place where you go to worship God. It's a religious building. It has significance not just in Judaism or Christianity, but a lot of religions have this idea of the temple. And even if it's not the word temple, you think about the word mosque, the word cathedral, the word tabernacle in the Old Testament, it's the same idea, isn't it? It's all the same thing. This structure or place or edifice to worship God. And in man's relationship with God, talking about Jehovah now specifically, there has always been this idea of the temple. Building a structure or a place that would be the center of worship to Jehovah. This is not a new idea. In God's relationship with mankind, there's always been this idea of the temple. Now, in the very beginning, what was that? That was the garden, wasn't it? That was the central place that where man and God had this relationship in the garden. Of course, that failed. And so we've transitioned throughout the Old Testament. You can watch this idea, even the tabernacle in the wilderness. It was just a precursor to the eventual structure that Solomon would build. And in fact, building the temple, that was kind of Solomon's peak. Because after that, some things went downhill for Solomon. You can read 1 and 2 Kings and Ecclesiastes and see the things that went wrong. 1 Kings 5 through 8, 2 Chronicles 2 through 7, this is the building of the temple. We're not going to read those. But I encourage you to go back and read those some point this week. 1 Kings 5 through 8, this is chapters. 1 Kings chapters 5 through chapter 8, 2 Chronicles chapter 2 through chapter 7. All the different aspects of building the temple, the monetary cost, the building materials, the time and expense of the labor, the final touches, detail after detail after detail. And this was something that Israel dedicated themselves to as a nation. This is not just Solomon doing this thing, but this was for Israel. Why was it so important? 1 Kings 8, 10 through 13. And when the priests came out of the holy place, a cloud filled the house of the Lord so that the priests could not stand and minister because of the cloud. For the glory of the Lord filled the house of the Lord. Then Solomon said, "The Lord has said that he would dwell in thick darkness. I have indeed built you an exalted house, a place for you to dwell in forever." The temple literally was where God was. And this idea that being dwelt in thick darkness in the cloud, what was that? That was to kind of cover his presence so he didn't smite people just by being in the room. So this place, this temple, was built so that the priestly service would take place there. The most important religious object, the Ark of the Covenant, would be in the temple. God's presence was in the temple. Now, of course, Solomon recognizes an important truth in 1 Kings 8, 27 through 30. "But will God indeed dwell on the earth? Behold, heaven and the highest heaven cannot contain you. How much less this house that I have built." Man, that's an understatement. God existing outside of space and time, infinite in all of his attributes, so amazing and so awesome, cannot be contained in a small 24 by 24 building, or whatever the dimensions, I just made that up. Whatever size structure it is, not big enough to contain God. "Yet have regard to the prayer of your servant and to this plea, O Lord my God, listening to the cry and to the prayer that your servant prays before you this day, that your eyes may be open night and day toward this house, the place which you have said my name shall be there, that you may listen to the prayer that your servant offers toward this place, and listen to the plea of your servant and of your people Israel when they pray toward this place, and listen in heaven in your dwelling place when you hear, forgive." The temple was a place for God, but it was more a place for Israel. Again, God cannot live in this small little building and be all contained in that building. Now, part of God was in the temple, right? But the entirety of God was not in there, because the entirety of God surpasses the entirety of the physical universe. But the temple was the place where Israel could focus on God. That small portion of him that lived in that temple, that was for Israel to pray toward, to focus on, to serve in, a place where Israel could connect with God. And so what does Solomon want God to do? To focus on the temple, to center himself on the temple again. Why? Notice these key words in 1 Kings 8:53 surely cannot be right. That must be a typo. 27 through some 3, 33 probably. Two key words, in and toward, in. And when the people are in Jerusalem, where were they supposed to worship? That was the temple, right? That was the whole point of building it, that there's this central place where Israel could go and worship. That was the center of their worship. And they worshiped in there. Now, of course, not everybody could go into all parts of the temple, right? You had the Levites and the priestly service, and you've got these different levels. But it was all focused inward toward where God was in the holiest of holies, the Ark of the Covenant. That was where they were worshiping, because that's where God was. It made sense. It's just logic. God is in the temple. Let's worship in the temple. But even toward, this idea of toward, when they were not in the city, where would they face? Again, the idea, maybe they wouldn't physically face, although probably a lot of them did, but the idea they were thinking back what? To where God was, physically, literally, where God resided in the temple in Jerusalem. Even if they were spread out across the whole world, they were praying toward this. And of course, a lot of different religions have this. One in particular has a very literal interpretation of this idea as they pray toward the central building. It was an idea of praying back toward God. Again, it wasn't about the physical structure, but it was about the fact that God lived there. And if God didn't live there, what was the building? Well, it's just another building, four walls and a roof. And more elaborate than that, obviously. But without God's presence, what good was it? They weren't praying toward the building, they were praying toward the place where God was, the temple. The lives of the Jews were inexorably centered around the temple and what it represented and meant. And even when they were outside the city, they needed to remember where the temple was, and if they could, pray toward it. Again, recentering their lives. Wherever they were, whatever they were doing, refocusing back on where God was. Could you be a Jew and not know about the temple? Absolutely not. It was central to your identity. You couldn't even have a relationship with God without being deeply concerned about the temple. But the idea, and we're studying in Ezra and Nehemiah, they come back after the temple's been destroyed, and they're so focused on rebuilding the temple, it was part of who they were as a nation. It was central to their identity. Now, Jesus even had this high view of the temple. It was important to Jesus. Again, Jesus being born under the old covenant, right? When Jesus was born, there were no Christians. Just because Christ hasn't died yet. So Jesus, born into this Jewish nation centered on the temple. And it's ironic because, of course, Jesus eventually was going to replace it, right? I'm going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days. So he had this understanding in his mind all throughout his life. But John 2:13-17, now the Passover of the Jews was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. He found in the temple those who sold oxen and sheep and doves and the money changers. Man, losing it, guys. Doing business when he had made a whip of cord. Now, just picture this. Oh my goodness, this is one of those passages that just... This is one of the most visualized passages in Scripture. I mean, I wish I kind of had a whip that I could be up here with a whip. But you can just see what he's doing. He walks in. Like, imagine somebody walking in that door, and they see what we're doing, and they make a whip, and they start whipping people. I mean, throwing over the pews, just railing at people. This whip, I mean, this is probably like a long thing here. He's just like wiping about. I mean, he was angry, guys. Making a whip of cords, he drove them all out of the temple with the sheep and the oxen and poured out the changers' money and overturned the tables. And he said to those who sold doves, now, let me back up again. Take these things away! That's what he's doing. This is not passive. This is not peaceful. Jesus cared about what they were doing to his Father's house. You can feel the passion in this. Do not make my Father's house a house of merchandise. This temple is important. This is my Father's house. This is God's house. What are you doing? Then his disciples remembered that it was written, "Zeal for your house has eaten me up, has consumed me." Jesus cared. You can see that. Why was Jesus upset? Because they had turned the temple into a market or a store. And that was not what the temple was meant to be. The temple was meant to be a place of worship. Now, to be sure, business was conducted in the temple on a regular basis. In Jewish culture, again, the temple was the center of their nation, the center of everything that they did. Probably marriage, things about marriage and things about business and things about property. A lot of that took place in the temple complex. Maybe not in the holiest of holies or in the temple proper, but in this complex of the temple, a lot of this stuff would have taken place. But what they had done is taken something that would have been tertiary or secondary, something that was a byproduct of the temple, and they had made it the focus. This market, this business, was supposed to be a secondary thing. And again, imagine the temple. You're doing business in the temple. Why? Because you wanted God to bless your business. And so even if you were doing business or doing personal things in the temple, it was about refocusing on God, but they had just totally abandoned that. It wasn't about God anymore. It was about how can I make the most money. Our problems are not new. The problems with our society, we're not inventive. We're not particularly creative. We have the same problems that people have had for thousands of years. Again, the temple was just a building, right? And again, one that he himself would obsolete in a few short years, but he calls it my Father's house. Now, again, of course, God didn't live there in the sense that we live in houses, yet the place was important to God. It was still the center of worship at that time. Again, remember, this is under the Old Covenant. This is the time when the temple was supposed to be the most important building in the Jewish life. And they had perverted it. They had made it a mockery. They had totally distorted its purpose. Even though the building was not the be-all, end-all, it was important, again, because God made it important. It wasn't never about the structure. It was never about the walls. It was never about the concrete or the whatever it was, the wood and the gold and all that stuff. It wasn't about that. It was about what was supposed to go on inside and what it represented. The building was only important because God made it important. The sin of the people was not the business, but in the misvaluing of the temple. Now, of course, the temple isn't still around, right? The temple was destroyed 80, 70, 69, depending on how you date things. And it was never rebuilt. The temple was destroyed, and it's done. It's over with. And under the Christian dispensation, there is no physical manifestation of God's presence on the earth. God does not live in a cloud of darkness anymore. It's not the way it is. It used to be that way, and now it's not. The ark is gone. The temple is gone. All those things that were associated with God's physical presence, they're gone. We don't know where they are. The ark in particular, lost a while ago. The temple is gone. All these things associated with God's physical presence no longer here, but there still is a holy place. The temple terminology is not gone. And in the New Testament, over and over again, we have this building, structure, temple language. So many hallmarks of that temple. 1 Corinthians 3:16 through 17, do you not know that you are God's temple and that God's Spirit dwells within you? If anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy him. For God's temple is holy and you are that temple. Again, you are God's temple. Who's that talking to? Isn't that talking to the Christians? Isn't that talking about you and me? Those who have God's Spirit dwelling within us, we are the temple of God. And all those things that we talk about, the reason I talk about the temple in this lesson, all those things in the Old Testament temple, all the different ramifications, all the different implications, all the different significance surrounding the temple in Jerusalem, all that has transferred to us. Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? What communion has light with darkness? What accord has Christ with Belial? What part has a believer with an unbeliever? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God. As God said, I will dwell in them and walk among them. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. God is here today. And when we're most focused on problems we have at work, playing on our phone, taking a little nap, we are very tangibly doing that in front of God. Can you imagine if you had a job interview and you went to that job interview And instead of talking to the person that was going to employ you, you just said, I'm just going to take a little nap right now. Or if you're in a big meeting with your boss, and instead of talking about the business of the day, you are playing on your phone. That's what you're doing, man. That's what we're doing. When we're not focused on this worship, I mean, that's it. That's the analogy, and really the analogy is not strong enough. But that's what we're doing. And we've got this comparison between the temple in Jerusalem and the temple of the church, the temple of the people. Dwelling place of God, check. Dwelling place of God. Center of worship, check. Center of worship. Why do you think there's so many passages about the assembly in the New Testament? When the church assembles together, that's the temple. I mean, that's it. That's why we're gathered together, being this temple of God. Center of the lives of God's people. Should be the center of the lives of God's people. But so often it's not. You could not be a proper Jew and not have some sort of dealings with the temple. Can I say this honestly? You cannot be a Christian and not be a part of the assembly. Those are mutually inclusive things in the New Testament. There's not this idea of a Christian who's just a Christian by himself and is not a part of an assembly. It doesn't happen. Because the assembly, the people, they're the temple. And just like you couldn't have a relationship with God without the temple in the Old Testament, you can't have a relationship with God without the temple in the New Testament. You can't do it. The covenant, or the comparison between the Ark of the Covenant and the heart of the Christian, again, what does he say? If God's Spirit dwells within you? Now, of course, again, the comparison is so amazing. Can God be contained in our hearts? No. I am not bigger than God. Right? You are not bigger than God. All of us collectively are not bigger than God. So it's not like we're contained all of God in our hearts, but He sent a part of Himself, and He still wants to live in us and be with us, even though I'm tiny, even though I'm pathetic, even though I'm sinful, even though I'm pitiful. God still wants to live in me, and that's amazing. That's fantastic. Do we act like He lives here? Or do we act like He's away on vacation? We act like this is His summer home. Like this is His weekend getaway. That's what we act like, really. That this church is the weekend getaway of God. He doesn't live here on a daily basis. He just lives here on Sunday and Wednesday. That's ridiculous. Like the temple in Jerusalem, the temple of the church is supposed to be the place where people can come and worship God. That's what this is for. We're gathered here, why? To worship God. That's what the assembly is, and the church exists primarily as a place where people can gather and worship. This is why the concept of the assembly is so prominent in the New Testament. The assembly is the greatest temple for God's worship. Now, don't get me wrong. You can worship God alone. That's possible. But if we're thinking about the temple language, the temple of the assembly is far greater than the temple of your individual life. It's a grander structure. The comparison between the tabernacle and the temple. The tabernacle was great. It was awesome as they're wandering around in the wilderness over there. But when they get to Jerusalem and Solomon builds that temple, you should go, and this is why I say go read 1 Kings 5 through 8, 2 Chronicles 2 through 7. You see all the different elements of the structure, all the different gold and the silver and all the different woods and all the different materials and all the different grand ideas. That's what the assembly is. It's the best possible temple for God to be worshipped in. The Jews in Jerusalem centered their whole lives on the temple. It was the center of everything. It was a place of worship, but it was also a civic center. Not that that was the most important part of the temple, but the people wanted God to be involved in everything. Every different facet of their lives, they sought God's approval. And what was the way that they did that? Let's do it in the place where God resides. Let's involve God in every different part of our lives. Could you be a good, and again, I've asked this several times, could you be a good Jew and not care about the temple? Read Ezra and Nehemiah. It was fundamental to the Jewish life, and the temple of the church should be the central point of our lives. There is nothing else more important. If the temple is where God lives, then by default, that place is more significant than every other place on the planet. The place where God lives, because God is there, is the most important place. And if the God lives in the temple of the church today, then by extension, The church is and should be the focus of our lives. Too many people want to worship without the temple. Again, let's read this. Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? What communion has light with darkness? What accord has Christ with Belial? Or what part has a believer with an unbeliever? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God. As God has said, I will dwell in them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. What's the warning in this passage? Again, we got a bunch of different things. If we are the temple of God, we must watch what we allow in it. And there's a set of contrasts here. Righteousness with lawlessness, light and darkness, Christ and Belial, believer and unbeliever, temple and idols. This is supposed to be a holy place. And what do? We do what those people in John chapter 2, we do what they did and we pervert the purpose of this temple. Should there be idols to other gods in the temple of the God? Of course not. But more than other religions, there's a very clear and present danger that we will fall into that trap of the first century Jews in Jesus' day. If we are not careful, we will distort the purpose of this temple. We confuse the building with the temple. Now, this building's nice. It's got some flaws. But overall, I think it's a nice structure. We've got a lot of nice classroom space upstairs and over there. We've got a nice family life center. We've got some good kitchen space. But the building, just physical stuff. God does not live in this building. If we were not here, this would just be another structure. And when we're not here, God's not like hanging out in the baptistry. I mean, seriously, I'm not kidding here. God does not live here when we are not here. This building is just walls and a roof. Now, it's a nice building, don't get me wrong, and it's a great place for us to gather and worship, but God does not live here. He lives in you. And so when we leave this place, God's not left behind. God goes with us. Because the dwelling place has never been the building. The dwelling place is us, the temple, our hearts. And so when we leave, we carry God with us. And if we should leave and go worship in another place, we're not leaving God behind. If we decide to tear this building down and move across town and build another building, it's not like we've destroyed God's dwelling place. He'll just go with us, the people, to wherever we're going to worship next. It's good and nice to have a building, but even if we were just meeting in that field out there, that would be the temple. Think about the places in Africa and the pole barn that we're trying to build for the Christians. Again, it's good to have a building, and particularly for them, they don't want to get rained on a bunch. And that's nice. But even if we were worshiping on a boat in the middle of the ocean, that would be the temple. Even if we decided to go out on the front pavement out there and just all sit in a circle, that would be the temple. Because the temple has never been the material building. The temple has always been the people. Making the temple of God an afterthought. We treat it as just another institution, don't we? We treat it as just another place of business. We treat it as just another place that we go sometimes, instead of what it is, the place where God Himself lives. We want God to be a temporary house guest, don't we? And again, the analogy, if God lives within us, we don't want Him living all the time. We want Him to maybe come on the weekends, come visit sometimes. We don't want Him to take up permanent residence. Because what does that mean? If He lives here in us permanently, that means that whenever I'm sinning, whenever I'm doing what God doesn't want, whenever I'm living an unrighteous life, whenever I'm talking bad about His church, whenever I'm talking bad about my fellow Christians, whenever I'm mistreating somebody, whenever I'm cheating on my taxes, whenever I'm cheating on a test, whenever I'm lying to my spouse, I'm doing that very literally right in front of God. That would be like as a kid, if you decided to do all your bad stuff, I don't know what it is. Oh, here's what it's like. It's like you're a kid and you have a curfew, right? And you really don't want to be inside the house. You don't want to be inside because your friends are all hanging out somewhere else, whatever, wherever kids hang out. I don't know where kids hang out. We always sometimes went to IHOP because they're open all the time. So all your friends are at IHOP and you're supposed to be in your room. And here's what it would be like. You want to sneak out of the house, but before you do that, you call your parents into your room and do it in front of them. That is what it's like when we sin. Because God is with us all the time. And so when we're sinning, we do that in front of God. When we're refusing to get up and go to worship, we're doing that in front of God. When we refuse to talk to our coworker about Christ, we're doing that in front of God. We treat God like He's not here all the time, but He is. We treat the temple as something it isn't, like the people of Jesus' day. When we corrupt the purpose and the holiness of the temple, we are bringing corruption into the very presence of God. And think about how that works. If God could not bear to look at Christ, His Son, because of the sins of the world on Him, when we live lives of sin, how can we think God would remain with us? But when we bring corruption and sin and wickedness and unrighteousness, when we bring that into the church, not even that, but when we distort the purpose of this church, when we think it's about money, or we think it's about attendance, or we think it's about making us feel good, or we think it's about all these other things that the church could be about, then Jesus will yell at us what He yelled to them. Remember, it isn't about the building. I don't care what you're doing here. This is just a building, four walls and a structure. It's a good building. I like it. But we have this idea as if sin in the church building is worse than sin in any other building. That's kind of ridiculous, really. You know what is worse? Sin in the lives of a Christian than sin in the lives of somebody who's not. Because at least when a member of the world sins, they're not doing it right in front of God. At least when a member of the world sins, they haven't invited God into their lives and then just spat in His face. But when we sin, we are doing it very... Oh, man, guys. Sorry, I had to compose myself for a moment. Do we even care about God at all? And so when I talk bad about the church, I'm talking bad about God's temple. When I treat my fellow Christians like garbage, I'm treating the temple of God as garbage. When I treat them poorly, when I lie, when I gossip, when I cheat, when I steal, when I am mistreating my fellow Christians, I am doing that to God. Is this temple holy or not? God wants it to be holy. And again, by the temple, I'm not talking about this building. This group of people, are we holy or are we not? And when we submitted to God in baptism, when we repented of our sins, when we confessed our flaws, when we decided to turn away from the old life, be buried with Him and risen to walk in newness of life, when we committed to that, we committed to God living with us on a daily basis, on a minute-by-minute, second-by-second basis, we committed to Him being with us all the time. Why? Not just so that He could be watching us, so that He could help us, so that He could bless us, so that He could care for us in a way that only somebody who's with you all the time could. It's not like when things go bad, because the converse is also true, isn't it? When you have horrible things happen in your life, when somebody betrays you, when your friend mistreats you, when you lose your job, when you lose your house, when you break your leg, God is with you, feeling it with you. And He cares what happens to us. Kind of got off track. Bringing it back in. We are the temple. When we're talking about what is the church, what is the significance of the church, why are we a part of the church? We, as a group of people, are the place where God lives. That is what we are. We're the place where God has decided to put down roots. The place where God has decided to make His home. And there's a profound statement in that, that God would even dare to do that. That God would think so highly of us as to think that we deserve to be His home. That God would think we're good enough for Him. That God would think we're great enough that He could live with us on a permanent basis. Have you ever thought about the statement that God is making when He says that? I want to live with you. I want to dwell in you. I want to be with you all the time because you are awesome. You are amazing. You are fantastic. Again, we think about the temple. Why was the temple good? It was because God said it was. Without God's presence, it was just a building. And without God's presence in our lives, no, we're not amazing. We're not awesome. But when God is with us, we are, because He makes us so. He makes us amazing. He makes us so fantastic if we decide to live the way that He wants. He makes us more valuable than gold, more valuable than silver, more valuable than platinum, more valuable than cash. He makes us the most important thing in the universe. Again, not because we're so great, but because God has decided to live here. So let's live like God is here.